Hi, I'm Peter Hill, and this is the D Word Podcast, where we talk dementia. Welcome along to another edition of the podcast. This week, my guest is Dr. Marvin Berman, a pioneer in the use of light therapy in the treatment of dementia. Well, Marvin, it's great to see you again and have you back on the show.
Thanks,
looking back, it was January 2021 that we last met, which
how time flies. We're almost exactly a year.
Exactly.
It's our anniversary.
Before we get into the new research you want to tell us about, because it's been a year, can you just kind of revisit the whole thing about light therapy for our audience?
Well, thank you. I think that we certainly want to make the case now for how specific wavelengths of light, red, infrared, green, you know, all across the spectrum and beyond the visible spectrum, have now been shown more and more to have very specific biological and therefore clinical relevance specific to particular types of neurodegenerative or neuropsychiatric or neurodevelopmental disorders. And so Quiet Mind has been researching and developing products, devices that we found to be helpful in specific areas related to neurodegenerative conditions like Parkinson's, Alzheimer's, other forms of dementia, ALS, and traumatic brain injury, things like that. So that's been our focus for quite a while. We are now also interested in how to integrate the use of brainwave biofeedback training, or what's called neurofeedback, into the process of delivering a more complete therapeutic intervention. So light therapy in and of itself is a tissue level intervention where you're delivering photons of light energy into the brain or into the body that can be absorbed by the cells, the mitochondria in the cells, and that allows them to increase the output of the chemical called adenosine triphosphate, which is a chemical catalyst for all biological activity. So it's an energetic delivery system, if you will, and that can increase the body, and in this case, the brain's capacity to enhance its own healing and self-organizing and self-correcting potential. Well, that's what we've been doing, and that's what light therapy is about. But that tissue level intervention does not necessarily directly renormalize the electrical connectivity that may well have been disrupted by the tissue level degrading. So what we've then proposed is that if you combine the photobiomodulation with the brainwave biofeedback training, which is specifically designed to renormalize the brain electrical network activity, now you've got a more complete intervention strategy.
Yeah, it sounds very interesting. I mean, you're obviously, you know, getting results and researching all the time. What are your latest findings?
So findings now is that we now are starting to see that there may well be a difference in the impact of certain wavelengths. So the 810 nanometer wavelength may, according to some studies now being done out of China, that there can be a difference in the impact on the viability of the cell from the 810 nanometer wavelength. Whereas the 1060, 1080 nanometer range that we've been working with in development of the Neuradiant device that's being promoted by Neuronic Devices. So the Neuradiant uses the 1070 nanometer wavelength now, and that's now being shown to have maybe a more positive impact on proliferation and differentiation of the neurons. So growing new neurons and new synapses, the connections that grow out of the neuron to connect with other neurons, that proliferation of neurons and their synaptic potential, that the proliferation may be greater with the 1070 nanometer wavelength. So our thinking now is enriched and diverging away from, oh, it's this or that. And maybe really we have to start thinking about this and that and maybe something else. So that's been very exciting. We're also seeing that the laser light, even though it's more powerful, the fact that it's more concentrated in a particular area is also a limitation. And so the research coming out of the University of Texas at Arlington in Professor Hanley Liu's lab has shown that the light delivered by the 800 nanometer laser compared to the stimulation coming from 810 nanometer LED light is different in the fact that the attenuation of the beneficial effect on increasing hemoglobin and cytochrome C oxidase, which is the chemical that goes into the protein that reacts in the mitochondria that then produces more adenosine triphosphate. So that reaction, that positive reaction, attenuates much less in the LED stimulation context than in the laser. So once you turned off the laser, while it did give you more of those things, the hemoglobin and the cytochrome C, as soon as you turned it off, it dropped like a rock. Whereas with the LED stimulation, the improvement continued even after they stopped recording the data, even after they stopped the stimulation, and then continued even after they stopped recording the data of how it was improving, it was still going on and up an increase. So that, from a clinical point of view, me as a clinician, I'm thinking about what is going to confer the greatest amount of clinical benefit to the person. Now I'm starting to understand how the LED stimulation can very well be a more beneficial treatment option compared to the lasers, not to mention the safety issues and the expense and things like that, but the idea of being able to continually confer benefit using the LEDs was a very important finding.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good. UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
So in terms of that benefit, I mean, bring it down to a kind of basic level. How much exposure would you need, at a time to make a difference?
12 minutes.
12 minutes. Wow. Okay.
I know you thought I was going to say something like an hour. No, our original research, Peter, that I talked about way back when, all that year ago, the original research was 6 minutes twice a day. That was it. People put the helmet on, pushed the button, ran for 6 minutes, came back 5 hours later, put it on, hit the button, ran for 6 minutes, did that for 2 months. And that was it. And we saw a significant improvement in a range of functions, including working memory and motor performance and mood and a range of other cognitive functions. So we know that a direct intervention with photobiomodulation can have very rapid and very beneficial and lasting benefit. And the fact that you can do something like this yourself at home whenever you want, you know, with guidance from professionals who can help with optimizing the benefit for you over the internet, you know, it makes it a very viable and useful treatment option.
Yeah, you know, it strikes me that it is, you know, as you say, a very useful and viable option. And yet we don't hear much about it, to be honest. I mean, you know, if I hadn't met you, I wouldn't know about it at all.
Well, this is the when I first met John Haas, who was the benefactor for Quiet Mind Foundation back in 2007. He was a dyed-in-the-wool, hardcore, you know, agricultural biochemist, and I treated his wife, and you know, he said, "Well, I don't understand. If the psychiatrist that you're working with, who we were seeing, hadn't told me to go down the hall to talk to you, I would have no idea what the heck this was or that it even existed. Why? What's going on?" And I said, "Well, if you want me to get on my soapbox, I think the real answer is that there's not 30,000 good-looking people in suits going around giving out free samples of photobiomodulation and neurofeedback. I don't know what else to tell you." He's like, "Oh, that can't be the reason." I'm like, "Well, that's as good as I've got." He's like, "Well, why is that?" And I said, "I think it may have something to do with the fact that, you know, the National Institute of Health and most other, you know, funding agencies are not funding research for anything other than finding the magic pill that's going to make it all go away from taking the magic pill. And until people are, you know, disabused of that delusion, if you will, that's the way it's going to be, because everybody's looking for that, you know, magic, make it go away, and don't make me do anything other than swallow a pill in order to make it happen."
Yeah,
that's it.
I guess that's kind of bred into us, isn't it, from, you know, fairly early age.
Yeah, maybe for the last 900 years.
Yeah.
Or maybe 1,500 years. I mean, if you want to go back to Hippocrates, you know, and people like that, where they were basically saying, you know, the doctor is God, you know, we've been building into the Western mindset that doctors are God. So don't question God.
Yeah, it's you know, it's a strange situation. I don't do, you know, as you know, many people all over the world with great projects like yours. And it does seem to me that, you know, people need to team together here. You know, we've got this approach, we've got that approach. Let's kind of, you know, all work together to find out, you know, the best way of going about things.
Well, I think that it's really going to be through what we in the States would call grassroots efforts, like podcasts like yours, and organizations of doctors who are working at the edges of traditional medicine and are looking at things like functional medicine doctors who focus more on what is the root cause of the problem and how do we address the root cause, as opposed to how do we remediate the symptoms. And those are two very legitimate ways of looking at treatment. They are rather different. And we're trying to look at root cause analysis and seeing that when you consider root causes of neurodegeneration, more and more people are coming to recognize that there are essentially two causal factors, and that's hypoperfusion and inflammation. So lack of blood flow and inflammation. So if you can do something to modify the increase of blood flow, and you can thereby decrease inflammatory processes, you're going to see a significant improvement in whatever the symptoms are associated with that particular person's, you know, condition. That's how we're approaching what we're doing with the photobiomodulation and the neurofeedback and functional medicine. So those are the three legs of the therapeutic model that Quiet Mind is promoting and utilizing in our clinical work and also in the research that we've been doing on behalf of Neuronic Devices Limited, which is based in Ireland and in Germany, and is promoting the use of the Neuradian 1070 device, which I can show you. You want to see it?
Yeah, obviously it's radio, but I'll describe it. It almost looks like a cycle helmet to me, I suppose. That would be the best.
Yeah, it's like a cycle. Yeah. It's like a cycle helmet. People can look it up at neuronic.online, neuronic.online. But it is like a bike helmet with an array of 256 LEDs built in. And the LEDs are able to be controlled by a tablet.
Yeah.
And the tablet then can be controlled like with a touch screen. So you can just plug in the appropriate treatment protocol, which is developed in collaboration with the consultants at Neuronic, which at this point means me, but there are other consultants who are going to be working with us. But you can use the Neuradiant device to stimulate different quadrants of the brain. So you can differentially stimulate different areas of the brain in terms of how much stimulation you're delivering at what pulse frequency, what intensity, and for how long, based on the assessment of your brain functioning using something called quantitative EEG. And so we can take the quantitative EEG, which is a regular EEG measurement of brain electrical activity at specific locations, comparing that to a normative database by age, gender, and left and right-handed. And you can then determine which areas of the brain needs to be supported, either in increasing certain activity or decreasing other activity. And you can see what those patterns of activity might be in different parts of the brain and how those different parts being dysfunctional relate to the symptoms that the person is having. So there's a great deal of evidence that shows that increased slower EEG activity brainwaves, the slower brainwaves, if those are increasing in amplitude or voltage, you're then seeing a corresponding decrease in cognitive flexibility and people being able to function and process information normally. And so as people develop dementia and progress in dementia, the slow brainwave activity increases and the faster brainwave activity decreases. So if you can deliver stimulation to increase the fast and decrease the slow, you're going to be ahead of the game in terms of helping people remediate some of those cognitive and behavioral symptoms. And you can do that with the light pulsing at certain frequencies, and you can also do that with the neurofeedback by doing operant conditioning, which is a different procedure and uses different device, but you can put them together into a very effective package.
And a very personal package by the sound of it as well, because...
It's extremely versatile, yeah.
Yeah.
People use that technology for a very wide range of issues, like attention deficit disorder, depression, anxiety, thought disorders, dyslexia, any of those kind of neuropsychiatric conditions, and head trauma specifically. I think one of the things that's probably important to add at this point is the fact that because we're all dealing with the COVID pandemic, my colleagues at Durham University and I and our medical director, Dr. Halper, we published a paper on the use of 1070 nanometer light as a therapeutic intervention to address the infectivity, the virulence, and the post-infection neurological injury caused by COVID. And because we know that 10 to 30% of everyone who's been infected with COVID, regardless of severity of symptoms, are going to be developing some degree of neurological damage. So that number by itself today is around 200 million people worldwide. If you add to that people with dementia of one sort or another, people with Parkinson's of one sort or another, and people with traumatic brain injury, you're now at 350 million people worldwide who need what we're talking about yesterday.
Yeah, that's that is a sobering right. thought, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. It is.
Statistics. Yeah, quite amazing.
That's where we are. That's where we are. So when I lectured at the American Association for Anti-Aging Medicine last month, there was a group of doctors all interested in longevity. And I said, well, you may be interested in longevity, but I think you'd like to have your wits about you over the long term, right? And they said, yeah. I said, well, then we all need to be starting with the number 350 million in our head, right? Because that's what we're really facing here. How are we going to deal with the fact that 350 million people are going to have this kind of problem? We're not going to be able to send people to somebody's private practice surgery or their clinic. That's not going to solve this problem at all. You know, that's a drop in the bucket. So delivering solutions for problems of that magnitude that are going to be coming about over the next, you know, one to two generations, absolutely has to be something that people can do themselves in their home. That's it. So that's why our entire research agenda and our clinical focus and our training and consultation is all about how can people do this themselves in their house and have it be effective and easy to use and reliable and cost effective. That's the bottom line.
Yeah. When you gave that talk, what was the reaction of the doctors you were talking to?
There were at least 80 physicians in the room. And when I said, raise your hand if you know what a quantitative EEG was, one person raised their hand. And when I said, how many people are using photobiomodulation in their practice? Two people raised their hand. So there is a profound lack of awareness. Right. This wasn't people who said, oh, it's a bunch of garbage, we wouldn't have anything to do with it. These are people who literally were saying, what's that? Oh, really? It can do that? I didn't know that. Wow, that's really interesting. Like, those are the responses, not, oh, this is silly. It was, oh, huh, I didn't know anything about that. So we were talking to people who literally had no clue what we were talking about. And by the end of 2 hours, they had a little bit more than a clue. By the way, that entire video is available online now at the Neuronic website. So if anybody's interested, it's there for the watching on their YouTube channel.
Yeah, I'll certainly give it a look.
It's an hour and 40 minutes. You might want to get a cup of tea.
Do it in portions, but in terms of training of medical professionals, then, you know, this is an area that needs expanding as well, doesn't it?
Significant, yeah. Well, it's just not, you know, there's only so many things that people can, you know, learn in medical school, and then they're on their own to think through how do they want to approach the practice of medicine. And hopefully, you know, more and more people are going to be looking at evidence-based solutions, especially in psychiatry and neuropsychiatry, that people will now take on the idea that there may well be alternatives to medication that need to be considered, like photobiomodulation and behavioral medicine, which is what biofeedback and neurofeedback are called traditionally. So hopefully they'll be, you know, taking those things more seriously. I certainly tried to get that information into the Department of Psychiatry at Thomas Jefferson University here in Philadelphia, and did so for a number of years. And it was difficult because the fourth and fifth year students had very, very little time for electives because of the program being as dense as it was. So it's just always going to be that crunch of time and priorities that people are going to have. And hopefully they'll be able to, you know, we'll be able to get information to them and package it in a way that they can, you know, rapidly take it in and make good use of it. So that's a challenge for us as educators and trainers.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good. The station that makes you feel good.
Yeah, it's a, you know, that is a big challenge. I mean,
well, that's okay. We can do it.
I'm glad to hear that. Here in the UK, you know, I think dementia is the greatest public health risk that we face. And yet,
without question,
a lot of the public health professionals don't tend to agree with me, because, you know, I spent a career working in public health and I heard the words dementia probably about less than 10 times, because all the concentration was on the heart disease and, you know, various things, which ironically are part of the causal factors of dementia anyway.
Well, the reason that you didn't hear about it much was because the NHS had nothing to offer other than a support group or, you know, an anxiolytic, you know, or some protease inhibitor that didn't do much of anything. And 500 plus drug trials later, we still don't have anything in the way of a real treatment pharmacologically. There's still nothing of any great consequence. Even that new aducanumab is offering a 27% decrease in the severity, but has nothing to do with the development of the symptoms. And I think last count, it was, what, $57,000 per person per year? Yeah. A draw, you know, everybody walks around with that kind of money in their pocket. not me. But there we are. So, I mean, I met with the head of Alzheimer's Scotland in Edinburgh in 2009, showed them the presentation that I had just done at the International Alzheimer's Meeting in Vienna. And we were vacationing in Edinburgh for several weeks at that time. And I met with him and said, oh, this is interesting. I'll get one of my colleagues at the university to take a look at it. And what I got back was that they didn't really see this as important as creating support groups in the different communities so that people could go and talk about how difficult their symptoms were and get emotional support. And I was like, you do understand that I'm talking about actually treating the disorder, not supporting people being upset about it. Like, this is an actual treatment. And they're like, well, we'd have to conduct more studies. And I was like, you do understand that I just presented the study, and you could replicate the study, but by replicating the study, you would actually be delivering treatment to people with Alzheimer's. Really, no kidding. Yes, we'll have to think about that. Anyway, never heard from them again.
That's really sad because, you know, my feeling on the subject, you know, I'm not an expert in the subject, but it takes all kinds of approaches, doesn't it? I mean, you know, you just can't go down one road. This is the whole thing that we need to deal with holistically.
You can go down one road if what you're trying to do is deliver, you know, profit for your shareholders. That's, then you can go down one road, but that's a motivational strategy that's different than, you know, dealing with 350 million people having the problem.
So,
it's a conundrum. It's a conundrum, and people are going to have to, you know, take back their own authority and take back responsibility for their own health and well-being in ways that they're not used to and never thought they were going to have to. And here we are with that being really the way it's got to be. You know, people are going to have to take seriously the fact that the traditional medical establishment is moving in a direction that's not necessarily going to take these kind of measures seriously at this time. Not that they've discounted them. It's like they're not even considering them because there hasn't been enough research with enough people and enough publications to really get their attention. That is starting to change now, and I'm very happy to be part of the reason why that's happening and want to support that in the work that we're doing at Quiet Mind and the work that we're supporting that's being done at places like Neuronic Devices Limited and seeing that this type of technology is getting out there. And there are devices, there are ways of thinking about this, there are functional medicine practitioners who are really making themselves available to study and learn how to incorporate these tools into how they work with their patients. So it's happening. It's just, you know, an educational process, an awareness process. And that's why, you know, I'm back here a year later going, Peter, carry on.
Absolutely, you know. Hopefully, you know, we'll stay in contact. It kind of strikes me, you know, that a lot of people are trying to use a tool where we actually need to use a toolbox.
And knowing how to use the toolbox does, in fact, require engaging with someone who is trained to use the tools. And that's why, you know, I'm providing that level of consultation. Which I guess being from America, I talk about it as being the clinical quarterback. And that unfortunately, in the way that healthcare has been defined, at least here, you know, the patient has been relegated into the role of being the clinical quarterback. Well, if you think about that for another 5 seconds, it doesn't make any sense at all, because the person who's the least knowledgeable is now being put in charge of organizing the intervention strategy and evaluating clinical outcome. Well, where does that make sense? So I say, why don't we work with the client, work with the patient, provide consultation about what the options are, what the research says, and how you can then array specific interventions and combine them in a way that can be optimally effective. That's something that only a clinician who's trained in those various approaches can really do for and with the client. So that's what we're doing.
Yeah, the time, unfortunately, is drawing us to a close. It's been, as it was almost a year ago, absolutely fascinating, Marvin. And, you know, I hope that, you know, the word does get out there and more people start to take notice of these
Thanks
types of intervention.
You. If your listeners are interested, we're here. We want to help. You know, please give us a call. Send us an email.
My thanks to Marvin, and hopefully more people will learn about his pioneering work on light therapy. That's it for this edition. Thanks for listening, and I hope you join me on our next D-Word podcast.